to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from a secret, hidden location somewhere in Clearwater, it's getting crazy, but I am so happy that I can still bring you wonderful, wonderful interviews and inspiration from authors who I love. Now, at the bottom of the hour, for his ninth visit to Joy on Paper, my guest is David Baldacci. And, of course, he's always an exciting, exciting guest. And today he's going to be talking about his newest book, Walk the Wire, which is the sixth in his Amos Decker series, and I love Amos Decker. He's a memory man. He doesn't forget anything, and boy, oh boy, it makes for some exciting reading. So I'm really excited that David's going to be joining me at the bottom of the hour. Now, it's funny, you know, I go back and I listen to some of my recommendations and also my interviews, and you know, even I get surprised sometimes that, you know, I forget. It's been now 5 years, can you imagine? And I've interviewed so many authors. And then I came across one of the authors that I've been telling you to read, because if you're looking for something to immerse yourself, you can certainly just jump into C.J. Box's books. He has this wonderful series that feature Joe Pickett, who's a game warden. And what I like about these books, particularly at this time, when we're all sort of stuck in the house, is that, well, you know, they are set out west, and it's always so much fun to just imagine yourself way out west, open sky country. No, you don't have to social distance, because you are distanced from everybody. So this is an interview I did quite a few years ago, and it's one of my favorite because we talk about a lot of things, and one of the things we talk about is my brother Tom, who when he was a teenager, he had a Falcon. Now, that Falcon scared me to death. My brother is absolutely a sweet and adorable, and always has been a sweet and adorable child, but that Falcon scared me, and I didn't like that Falcon. So we get to talk a little bit about that with C.J. Box, and I just want to say hello to my brother who's listening up there in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where I think they wanted to close the bridge and not let anybody up there. And he is a youper, and so it's so funny. He had snow the other day, the 18th of April. He had snow. Now, my brother loves snow, and he always complains, like, if there isn't snow. But even he, I think, and his wife, and definitely my sister-in-law, Debbie, where are my tulips? I planted tulips. I want tulips. And enough with the snow. It was just fun to be able to talk to C.J. Box about Joe Pickett. And so I'm going to play this interview. It's just part of the interview. The entire interview is on my website, radio-joy on paper. But I think you'll like it. And what's fun about it is, well, I was having fun. And it's always wonderful when you just love a guest so much that you just go right into it. And so, Ed, take it away. Let's go right into this interview with C.J. Box.
Well, I love a man in a cowboy hat. And so I really love my guest today, C.J. Box, because he looks great in a cowboy hat. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I have to have you back because everybody's always talking about you. I have, you know, Ace Atkins always raves about you, and Larry Block always raves about you. And I love you because, as I said, you look so good in a cowboy hat.
Well, thank you.
And you drink bourbon, which I really like a man who drinks bourbon, as Ace Atkins says it.
I do, yeah. I drink bourbon with Ace Atkins from time to time.
He has mentioned that from time to time. So there's been some, I bet, some really good stories told over that bourbon.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, he's fantastic, and you're fantastic. And I can't believe that we're talking about your 17th absolutely fantastic Joe Pickett series.
Well, I can't either. You know, I didn't even know there would be a book two when I originally wrote Open Season back in 2001. But yeah, it's been 17 books in 17 years.
And Vicious Circle really, well, it hits it again out of the park. You know, no one would have believed really at the time when your first book came out and you said, oh, it's about a game warden, a state employee who's a stickler for doing everything by the book. No one would have believed this would become a bestseller, but it has really taken over the past 16 years and 17 years.
Yes.
Woo.
Yeah, and I would agree with them in most cases. The original book wasn't really intended to be the first book in a series. It was just a book about the Endangered Species Act and a game warden named Joe Pickett. But luckily, the foundation was established well enough in that first one that it's continued on. And each book has outsold the last, and the last book became a number one bestseller. So it's going well.
Oh, I know it. People always talk in the industry. People always talk about, boy, when he comes out with a book, it's going to be a bestseller, and we're so happy always. So, and I was thinking, you laid the foundation so beautifully from the first book that it really has taken. I think one of the daughters, which was Sheridan, was like 7 years old, and now she's out of college. And so we've followed the family along as they've aged and we've aged. I don't think so, but anyway, you know, and you've done a beautiful job with it.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate that. I think, I know for as a writer, it makes it every book more interesting for me when, because they all have occurred in real time. And like you said, and so Joe Pickett's a little older and his family's kind of branching out. And because, you know, anybody with kids knows how things change from year to year. And so it's always kind of a fresh canvas each time as the family grows up. So it's not, you know, it's not static, set in one time, Joe Pickett never gets older, et cetera. There are a lot of storylines that develop over the years. Although each book, I think, is written, I try to write each one as a standalone so that readers don't feel hopelessly lost if this is the first one they've ever read.
You're right. It's nice to have that they stand alone. Although I always recommend to people they just should start right at the beginning with Open Season and this just go on through it. You can have a couple of weeks of really fun reading, learning, you know, the entire storyline, I think.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And, of course, one of the characters in the books that I really like, and everybody, of course, always talks about Nate Romanowski.
Right.
I mentioned to you last time we talked that my brother was into falconry when he was he's my little brother. I was a teenager, and he was into this falconry thing. And he had a beautiful falcon, and I thought it was gorgeous. But, you know, when you have a little brother who has a dangerous animal, and you're supposed to, you know, tell him to pick up his clothes and do his laundry and stuff, there was always that little bit of fear with that falcon. Now, of course, I could appreciate it more. But it was a beautiful animal, and so that's always nice. So I love reading. Of course, in Off the Grid, Nate had a big part there with the falconry thing. So it's always, but it's, I always enjoy reading that part.
Well, thank you. I enjoy writing it. You know, falconers, as you know, have their own kind of special world view, and I've known a lot of them. I'm not a falconer, but I've been hunting with falconers, and I've got friends who are falconers, and that's where I learned a lot about it. And recently, the number one falconry organization in the country, the California Hawking Club, kind of made me an honorary member, and a lot of those falconers really enjoy following Nate Romanowski through these books, and I love writing about falconry. I think it's just fascinating. And for those who haven't read the books, that's Nate Romanowski's Joe Pickett's friend and protector, and sometimes antagonist. They have different relationship all the time, and in this one, he does make an appearance. But it's certainly the whole book is not about him; it's
no.
More about Joe Pickett in this case.
Well, of course, this one is Vicious Circle. It's sort of goes back to a lot of the hunting, and Off the Grid was more an international book. But here we're
right.
Talking a lot about hunting and about poaching, which, of course, while Joe does not like people who poach.
Right. Obviously, you know, Joe Pickett's enforcing the game and fish laws in the state of Wyoming, and that's his first duty and priority. and there's a poaching ring operating in northern Wyoming in this book, and he cannot figure out who's behind it, who's responsible, and why they're doing it in such an unusual way. So that theme kind of carries all the way through it. And in Vicious Circle, it kind of picks up where the book Endangered left off 2 years ago. With Dallas Cates and the Cates family, and Dallas Cates, a rodeo champion, is getting released from prison, and he's vowed to go get after Joe Pickett and his family.
And the entire subject of endangered species, I think, is a fascinating one. Most people don't realize that, well, I mean, Wyoming is a state where, is it almost 50% is owned by the federal government?
That's right. Yeah, that's an unusual thing. You know, it's kind of unique to the West, Western states, where, yeah, 50% of the land mass is managed, owned and managed by different federal agencies. So that adds a layer of bureaucracy and attention on top of everything else that I try to explore in the book. And it's based on truth, because, you know, in addition to state law enforcement agencies and local ones, there's also law enforcement from the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, the National Park Service, and so on. So it gets kind of complicated, but, you know, it creates more conflict on the page for the book.
Well, you weave a nice story there about why this poaching is going on, and it's a nice mystery. It follows along. I love the opening segment where he's in an airplane, and it shows me, you know, you have to learn a lot of stuff as you go along writing about things. You learn about how, when they're searching for somebody who's lost out in the wilderness.
Right, and that was based on, that's how the book opens. Joe Pickett is doing a white-knuckle flight around the Bighorns looking for a lost hunter named Dave Farkas, and they're using a technology called FLIR, F-L-I-R, which is forward-looking infrared radar. And I was lucky enough to go on a ride with the Wyoming Civil Air Patrol when they were actually looking for somebody. And what this equipment will do is, in the dark, or even in the daytime, will show heat signatures of living beings and animals below in the forest so that people can be located. And so that's what they're looking for in the book, is somewhere wherever Dave Farkas is. And when they find the heat signature and then see other heat signatures moving in on this lone one, Joe realizes he's witnessing a murder in real time on an iPad screen.
Well, I like that you stay relevant, you know, with the iPad and with the FLIR. It's all on the edge, cutting edge technology, and that makes the storyline really move along and exciting, I think.
Well, thank you. And that's one of my favorite parts of writing every book, is the research itself. I love being able to do the things that Joe Pickett is going to do in the books and experience them. And I always find that people who are experts in their field, whether they're pilots in this case, or, you know, nuclear engineers in the last one, or supercomputer executives, they love to talk about what they do. Mainly, I think, because they really like to see their line of work portrayed accurately in a book and not with an agenda or a, you know, sense of prejudice going in. And I learn lots of things and try to put those on the page, because I think readers like to read about those things as well as, you know, whatever the page-turning plot is.
One of the themes that runs through your books always is the government, first the responsibility, like, to protect endangered species, but also sometimes the government stepping on toes of whether it's farmers or hunters. And so it's always an interesting dichotomy there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and it has to do with the built-in conflicts of so much management of lands versus, local management, state management, and people trying to make a living. And so the conflicts are always there. And I think in one of the books I talked about the fact that, you know, in the West, it doesn't matter who the president is, it just matters who the Secretary of Interior is, because that's the true president in this part of the world, because that's how management decisions are made.
When I'm reading a book, I always look for something new, something, you know, that I haven't read before, a line, a paragraph, sometimes a word, and I'm always happy when I find something that I haven't encountered before. And I, one of them was aluminum colored crew cut. Now, I love that. Did you? I mean, that's the first time I ever read that that description, and I thought that is so apropos to some. As a matter of fact, I was in a Waffle House, and there was a guy who came in. He was coming from Daytona, and he had a bike, a beautiful bike. And he comes in, and he takes off his helmet. And he had, now that I think about it, I wasn't clever enough to think about it at the time, but you were aluminum-colored crew cut. And I thought, oh, I like that. When I read that, I thought, so do you get a kick when you come out with something like that?
I do. And at times, especially when it's something that I'm pretty sure I haven't read somewhere else.
I don't think I have. I think you're the first one. Really, I do. I think it's great.
Well, thank you.
It's something that's so perfect. And I thought, oh, I like this. And people afterward, now people, everybody's going to use it, you know. But it's nice when...
Well, we can track that. Yeah,
I'm
we'll
going to track it because, you know, I read so many books. And if I had read that, I would know it. And I just thought, oh, I like that. So I thought, you know, I was wondering if you really get a kick out of coming out with something like that.
I do. And you know, I never try to, like, come up with something completely different. I just try to come up with something that's the most accurate description I can think of. And in that particular case, the pilot with this Wyoming Civil Air Patrol, I kind of described him in particular, and I was just recalling what he looked like, and very military bearing, and kind of tough and short and squatty, and very authoritative, and that's how it came out.
Well, they're going to use this now in writing classes, you know. they're going to say, okay, now if CJ Box can come up with such a absolute perfect description, you have to, but we're going to follow. We're going to watch now who follows
okay.
you. I think now it would be different. You know, I was talking to a British author a few weeks ago, Alex George, and I was thinking that now he would say aluminium.
Yeah, that's right.
It was not quite the same, but that boy, that when I read that, I knew exactly what that guy looked like. And I thought, oh, I got a kick out of that.
And I got a kick out of this interview. You know, if you could hear, I was just having so much fun. And this is what I just adore about doing Joy on Paper. I just love talking to authors. I love their enthusiasm. And so we're going to take a commercial break. And then when we come back, I'm going to have a few minutes to talk before David Baldacci joins me. And I was thinking, I had said it's his ninth visit. I think it might be his 10th or 11th. I mean, this guy is on the program all the time. But that's because he writes so many wonderful books. Okay, so take it away, Ed. Let's go to commercial, and I'll be back in a little while.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am am back, and I am just waiting for a call in for... we're going to be talking to David Baldacci, and this is always exciting for me because I love his books. I've been a fan of him since he started. And so it's going to be wonderful to talk to him about the new book, Walk the Wire. But in a few minutes, I just want to say again, I hope that all of you are being safe and you know, keeping the social distancing, and meanwhile, try to find books that really interest you. And one of the things that if you find that you can't actually write you know, a book at this time, you feel I'm not creative at this moment in time, you can do the research. And that's the wonderful thing. Research can take you into a world, a different world. And David Baldacci's new book is an example of that. He had to do a lot of research about fracking. Because it's set in you know, all around fracking. And so I'm sure that he had part of the fun of this book was the hours and hours that he spent doing the research. And if you have a book in you, if you have a family story, if you have an idea for some kind of, you know, new universe that you want to create because this universe is, like, driving you nuts, you can start writing. You can just start collecting ideas, putting them together, and having that all that background sort of in your head so that when you are ready to sit down and be creative and write your story, you can do it. What I would like to recommend actually to all of you, if you're going to write a complex story or a biography, a memoir, where there are lots of details, it's worth investing and learning how to use Scripter. Scripter is a program. It's just so much better than Word for keeping track of things. And the wonderful thing about Scripter, for example, like what's happening right now, you can turn your book into an EPUB or Mobi version by yourself. You don't need anybody to do it. So that way, if you want to, you don't have to print out your book to, you know, to read it. You can just do it and have it right there in front of you on your tablet. It really makes it so much easier. Scrivener, I think it's like $29. I mean, it's the value of this program is so enormous. I would pay $200 for this program, and I think it was $29 now. I when I bought it like 5 years ago, it was $19. It's an absolutely wonderful investment, and you will really be thrilled that all of your information, everything, all of your links. And remember, one of the things that is very important, and sometimes authors don't realize, that when the book goes to a publisher and they're doing the editing, they want to know where you got some of your information. And so it is really great to have Scripter and have it all organized there, and everything is in one place. And I just love that program. I just could rave about it because it is such a wonderful program to have. And so I'm just waiting now. I'm sure Ed will tell me any minute when David Baldacci gets on the line. They're calling in. They are probably, he's also probably in a remote location. Everybody in the world seems to be in a remote location, which I found very funny that some people, I love it. I love that story that came out today. Some people, rich people, have remote location, safe houses, safe places, safe caves, but they don't know how to get into them. I'm sorry. You know, if you're very rich, you should actually know how to get into your safe location and not have spent a fortune on it. Most of us, our safe location is right there in our closet, actually. I'm in a closet right now, but it's not an ordinary closet. This is a closet that's lined on three walls with books, just part of my thousands and thousands of book collection. I don't know anymore how many, since I get so many books all the time. But it's just fun. It looks really nice. You know, I'm looking around and I've got books to the left of me, books to the right of me, books behind me, and actually some books are on a really high shelf, and I don't know how they got there because I certainly could never get there, and I need my son to come back from Madison so that he can get them down. And, of course, he's stuck up there and he can't come home. And it was so funny. The other day he called and he said, "It's snowing, Mom. It's snowing. It's snowing. And it's April." He said, "Why is it snowing in April?" I said, "Well, you know, I'm a youper. It wasn't unusual. I mean, it wasn't. Usually we did have our tulips up." Okay, well, now I'm so thrilled that David Baldacci is with me again. Hi, David.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, well, I'm coming in from a remote location. I'm this is all so crazy, isn't it?
It is, yes, and we're all operating from remote locations, I think.
Oh, it's just too much. So it's a little bit difficult, you know, for me to go back and forth as I would normally, like, chat back and forth. So I'm going to, last week, Andrew Grant was on with his wife, Tasha Alexander. And they acted as hosts. They hosted themselves. they interviewed themselves, which was lots of fun. You know, I'm feel free to give really long answers today because we I don't want to have to interrupt too many times because there's going to be a clicking sound. But I am so thrilled that you are back because the new book, Walk the Wire, it is exactly the kind of book that people need today because it's intense, to put it mildly, and it's complicated, and it keeps your mind busy. It's a great thriller.
Well, I thank you very much. I mean, Amos Decker, you know, is probably one of my favorite characters to write about. He's my former college football player who had a brain trauma, and he came out of it with a perfect memory called hyperthymesia. And in this novel, he goes to a brand new place he'd never been to before with his partner, Alex Jameson. It's London, North Dakota. And what really got me thinking about this area and about this plot were two things that I read about. One was this religious colony called the Hutterites. There's a German religious sect that started centuries ago when it came to this country, and they, based on the scriptures of communal living, so nobody owns anything, everybody owns everything together. And I had read a story about this Hutterite colony in eastern North Dakota winning in an auction land sold off by this super secret Air Force facility known as an Eye in the Sky in eastern North Dakota. And their job is to look for missiles, nuclear missiles coming our way. They were deployed in the Cold War, but they're still out there. They sort of act as an air traffic control for space debris and stuff going through space, right? And I thought about, you know, a religious organization buying lands. They're right next to the super secret Air Force Academy. And I thought, that's intriguing. And then I read about the Bakken oil region in western North Dakota where, you know, billions of gallons of oil and trillions of cubic feet of natural gas are under there, and everybody's trying to get it out. And they figured out how to do it now. So it's a boomtown. So I took all the stuff that was in eastern North Dakota, the religious sect, renamed it, and the Air Force facility, and plunked it in the middle of the fracking industry in western North Dakota, and set it as an Amos Decker novel. So he goes up to London, North Dakota, because the FBI's been called in. A body of a young woman has been found by a hunter who was out looking for a wolf that was ravaging some cattle up there. And the curious thing about her is that she's already been autopsied. Postmortem has already been done on her before the police even got to her. And nobody knows why. Nobody knows who killed her or why they did it in that way. Now, Amos is curious because normally the FBI doesn't investigate local murders. Local police are capable of doing that. So he figures that the victim, Irene Kramer, she must have some significance to the federal government. Otherwise, the FBI would not be called in. So he and Jameson get there, and really all hell breaks loose after that. Lots of things start happening. It turns out the town has a lot of deep, dark secrets. And everything that I sort of injected to the plot, you know, the fracking and the Air Force facility and the religious organization all come to the front and all this, and it can sort of congeals together in this really complicated, multi-layered plot. And in the middle of it, Amos Decker runs into, you know, a family member, his brother-in-law, he hadn't seen in a long time. And that device allows me to let the readers have a peek into Amos Decker pre-brain trauma, what he used to be like, and also forces him to, you know, really look internally at himself about relations he has with his family. And, you know, maybe he's not doing quite as good a job about that as he should be doing, and he has to take a hard look at himself in that. So you get a lot of Decker, you get a lot of plot, and you get a lot of action.
Absolutely. I really like the introduction of Rene, his sister, and then his brother-in-law. I thought that was wonderful. That really, it's always wonderful when a character becomes fuller, you know, bigger, and there's more things to sort of for our mind to hook onto. And I enjoyed that. Then, of course, you did something absolutely wonderful. You bring in two of your other wonderful creations, Will Roby and Jessica Biel. I mean, it was a wonderful surprise.
Yeah, it really was, and I wanted to do that for a while, just because a lot of people, you know, over the years, you go to book events and online, and people, you know, when is Camel Club, when is Rio coming back, Roby and Rio, King and Maxwell, so this is a way for me to build plausibly into this storyline, a way for those characters to come in, so that the readers could look at it and go, yeah, that makes perfect sense, I can understand why they would be sent out for something like that, the stakes are really, really high. And I just loved how they were able to interact. I mean, Roby, you know, Decker and Reel and Jameson together was just, it was cool. It's kind of like your two favorite television shows and the characters cross streams, you know.
Exactly. I mean, they do it on NCIS sometimes. They go from one to the other. And I like that. I like, you know, suddenly I'm watching NCIS LA and then the characters from the regular NCIS show up. I think that it is. Because you develop these characters so beautifully that we really, I mean, they're real, you know, so we're not surprised. I mean, we're pleasantly surprised that they appear, but we know them, and it makes for a wonderful story. And as you said, you know, it gives more layers to the entire story. And I found the fracking interesting because I really didn't know too much about it. So did you actually go up there, and did you see some of this? And what was your research process for this? Because you must have done quite a bit of research on this subject.
I did. I read a lot about fracking. I talked to interviewed people who work in the fracking industry. I have seen fracking fields in West Texas, and you know what they look like, and they're very similar to what they have in North Dakota. North Dakota it's beautiful. It's isolated. You have the Great Plains also, but you also have fringes, badlands, in that section of North Dakota. So you've got some mountainous areas, buttes and all that in the middle of the flat plains. And it really is isolated. There's not a whole lot around. It's not very far to the Canadian border there. And you know, to the west, you're neighbored by Montana. So it's definitely not, you know, the big cities out there. It's small, isolated places. But still a lot going on. And yeah, I really had to understand and come to learn the fracking industry really well so that I could describe it in a very few words and use devices that wouldn't sound like a textbook, you know, just an observation here or the friend of Decker's, a family member of Decker's who works in the industry able through dialogue to sort of explain things in a layman's terms so people can understand it and follow.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned dialogue because you are a master of dialogue. Dialogue that moves the story. You know, some people can just write dialogue, but your dialogue moves the story along. And this is just what you said. And this is what I tell when I go to meetings with authors. I said, read Baldacci because his dialogue moves the story along and tells you a lot with so little.
Right. Yeah, and I take great pains to do that. I start out with a page, and I distill it down to a paragraph, and then I distill that down to three sentences, and it just has a lot more impact. And it's a way to, you know, consolidate words in a way that makes it a lot more effective. You start out big, and you distill it down to small, because it just has a much better punch, and people remember it.
Because sometimes with a story like this where they have a new subject they want to sort of talk about, and there's like pages and pages of exposition about it, and I mean that just dulls the mind. It doesn't move the story. And in your case, you just punch it in there with dialogue, and the story moves. That's why for anyone out there, if you're looking for a book that will absolutely occupy your mind, depending, I don't know how fast you read, but I would think most people would sit down and read this book in a day and a half. Because it's just a wonderful read, and it just moves so fast. It's a fast-paced.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I work very hard to do that. I try to be lean and mean in my novels, and just get you, you know, just what you need. I don't try to, you know, pad things and put stuff in there that you don't need. Because I like to read books that are streamlined like that as well and give me exactly what I need and no more than that. Otherwise, it's just filling up words that don't have to be there.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I remember when I read Memory Man, the first book in this series, and I assumed right away that, yes, he's writing a series about Amos Decker, because it was so captivating. And it's hard to believe, since Memory Man, this is book number 6. Wow. It's amazing. Don't the years go quickly?
They do. I mean, I look back over the last 25 years or so, and it seems like a blur in many respects. So, yeah, it has gone by fast.
Now, of course, you're involved so much in encouraging people to read. Your foundation does wonderful work in giving away books. Tell us about that. Tell us a little bit about Library Week, what libraries mean to you. And, you know, I know that you love to encourage, you know, people to read, not just your books, but other people's books. I love how you gave a little shout-out there to Dean Kuntz in this book. I think that's always nice when an author will mention another author's book, because that's what you have to do. You want to help people find more books to read.
Absolutely. You know, it's an ecosystem, and we all need to be good members of that ecosystem and support each other. Otherwise, the ecosystem dies. And, for me, it's I'm doing a Twitter thread on Library Week about what it means to me. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and didn't have an opportunity to travel anywhere, but I saw the world through books. I went to the public library and checked out books about and read about people that didn't look like me or dress like me or speak like me or pray like me, but we had sort of this common element of humanity. And I got that early on as a young child, and that has stayed with me throughout my whole life. It made me much more empathetic and considerate and feeling for people, no matter where they come from. And books and reading did that for me. And libraries are kind of like, you know, it's the place where everybody can go. Everybody is equal. You have this knowledge and ideas and creativity on the shelves, and you pluck them off and you read about things and learn about things you had no idea even existed before you opened that book. And what a great treasure that absolutely is. And over the course of the pandemic, I've done videos and stuff to support other writers, to recommend other writers' books to people. And I will continue to do that because I want everybody to read more, and there are a lot of fantastic writers out there, and I want to promote them and support them as much as I possibly can. You know, we in the book world, we have reviewers, we have people like you in the media who love books and support the book world. We have publishers, we have readers, we have bookstores, and we have writers, and we all need to support each other. And one way to do that is, for me, you know, obviously I had a big tour plan where I was going to go to a lot of bookstores and get people in and help the bookstores. That all got canceled, but I'm trying to do as much as I can with that online. And when times go back to more normal, I will start to tour again. But I try to do as much as I can virtually, doing Zoom sessions and Skype and doing it with some other authors and doing Q&As and doing a lot of stuff on social media to try to make up for the fact that I can't travel and go anywhere right now. But we can adapt. You know, people can adapt and be flexible, and we can still get things done.
Well, you and your wife have done such wonderful work with your foundation, which is called Wish You Well Foundation, and it's a non-profit organization, and you've dedicated it to supporting literacy and giving away books and just encouraging people to read. And I think it's, as people are getting, you know, going to food banks, I think it is wonderful if they can throw in a few books, too, because people need they need this diversion. They need something to occupy their minds, particularly now. And I feel so, for the young children, I just wish they would all be reading, you know, whether it's Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or Harry Potter, just to have this release for their minds.
It absolutely is. You know, books can do all of that, and books can be some of the best friends you ever have, particularly in troubled times, and they can allow your mind to escape for just a little bit and rejuvenate and let yourself rewind and, you know, get back to a better place, particularly, you know, during troubled times. And books can educate, books can intrigue, books can create passion in people. They can do all sorts of wonderful things. And I think, you know, now more than ever, people need to slow down, turn off the news, you know, from time to time, pick up a book and just lose themselves in someone else's imagination. And reading is a wonderful thing. You can carry it through your whole life. Books are some of the best friends you'll ever have. You know, the Wish You Well Foundation, we sponsor and promote and fund literacy organizations and initiatives across the country. We funded more than 40 programs last year. We'll probably do more than that this year. We've contributed millions of dollars to the cause. We've donated millions of books to food banks across the country. And we'll continue to do so because, again, I know what books meant in my life. And if I had not been a book reader early on, I could have turned out to be a very different person.
And you know, but I mentioned this before. So many of the kids in my Sunday school class, when I was teaching Sunday school a few years back, I mean, they got hooked on Vega Jane. Your books for kids are fantastic, and I think you know, any young person, if you have somebody in your family who's at the right age for it, the Vega Jane books by David Baldacci are wonderful, wonderful books.
Thank you. Yeah, I worked really hard on those. I had a lot of fun with them, and people have really enjoyed them, and it's been nice to see that. It's been nice to see, you know, a whole other generation of readership.
Well, you certainly are doing that, and I think your work is just great, and, you know, I can't tell you, you know, for all of us, it's very difficult. You know, I'm surrounded here by books. I have thousands of books in the house, but there are certain books that I go back to and that just I can sit down, I can pick up, and they calm you down. They really do have these books that just can take you for, even if it's just a half an hour, to take you out of the current your current problems.
Yes, absolutely right. They absolutely can. It's very easy to do. You bend down, you pick it up, and you turn that page.
That's it. Well, and of course, I don't have to ask you if you're working on something now, because you're always working on something. So, you know, but I do want to tell you that all of my listeners, and I mentioned also my mailman, my former mailman, who has a PhD in David Baldacci, because he not only has he read every one of your books and listened to every Audible book. I mean, he was questioning me in book number four. You know, he knows the details, and he's hoping that some university will offer a PhD course in David Baldacci, and he will be able to graduate from college.
That's awesome. I love that story. That's great.
I've seen wonderful fans, but this guy is like, ooh, way over the top, a PhD in David Baldacci. And it sounds like a good thing. And people, you can get it. His books, all, you know, you don't have to, they're all on Kindle and Audible. Some of the, I love the Audible books too. I'm getting more and more into Audible books. So you've just done a great job, David. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. And I hope to talk, well, I'm going to talk to you when the next one comes out, okay?
Absolutely. That's a done deal. I always enjoy being on with you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you now, David. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. David Baldacci, what can I say? Really fantastic. You know, I'm not sure. I was trying to think which, I can't say which one of his books is my favorite. I've got a whole, you know, I'm going to build this gigantic shelf across one wall, but I think his books are going to fill one whole shelf, because between the different series, it's mind-boggling, and they're all so beautiful. I really love the covers. You know, the new one has they have two different covers, and I'm not sure which one they finally went with. I got one. The wonderful thing about, you know, I get all these books in advance of everybody else. I get them like months sometimes before all of you get to buy them, and it's so they're first edition. So I have a lot of first editions of all of David Baldacci's books. This is fantastic. When I first started the program, I wasn't thinking about it, and I was giving away first edition books. And I realized, I don't think I should be doing that. They're all first editions. It's just so much fun for me, and I wanted to tell everybody, and particularly all of you publishers out there, thank you. Thanks. I'm getting books, and so I had to redirect them from going to the studio where I'm not going to pick them up, and I've redirected them to my house, and so my new mailman, he wasn't as aware of my program as my previous mailman, and when I started getting these books, he's, what is this? You know, I would get an occasional book, but now like I'm getting three or four books, so he can't leave them. He actually delivers them right to my door. He's absolutely so sweet. I really appreciate it. But I have so many. I tell you, I need to be on 5 days a week just to talk about and talk to all the different authors. And it is Library Week, and nobody's going to the library. But you can be. You have the Gutenberg Project, which is a library in and of itself right there online, and it is a wonderful place for you to go. And you can get all of the classics there, and they're available in different versions, Mobi, EPUB, PDF, whatever, text, and wonderful, and they're free. But, of course, I would go first to David Baldacci and start with this new book. It is really exciting, and I have so many things happening, and it's really hard in many ways for me to concentrate on anything, but with this book, I started reading it one night about 11 o'clock, and I'm still reading it. You know, I read, of course, faster than most people, but I'm still reading it at 3:30, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's not bad. Something that kept me busy for 4.5 hours, and I wasn't thinking about everything else that was going on in the world. It was wonderful, and I really appreciated the story because I had never really thought about all the things that go on around fracking and all the possible permutations of greed and corruption and excitement and whatever. It's all there. It's a wonderful story. And Amos Decker is one of my favorite characters. So you can get that. And and if you want to start the series, it starts with a book called The Memory Man. And that, I think that's one of the first, sometimes when you find an author's book, he starts a new series, and you know he's worked very hard on coming out with this character, and you really hope, you know, that it's going to work, because I've had authors who, they start a second series or a third series, and it doesn't quite click. It's not quite as good as the first one, the first series, and you think, you sort of feel sad for it, you know, well. But this Amos Decker, I mean, this is one heck of a character, and different from anybody else, and, you know, somebody who can remember everything and, you know, then has a brain injury. So you will really enjoy this new book, and so I hope that you'll try that one. And what else? Oh, I've got so many things happening. I had planned so many things after the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper. I was scheduled to do some speeches. I was scheduled to do some traveling. I was scheduled to have a big party. But nothing's happening. And so I do want to mention, you know, as David mentioned, that it's Library Week and nobody's going to the library. I owe so much to MacGregor Public Library in Detroit. It was the place that took me to new dimensions, and I was so thrilled with that library. It was so, so beautiful, and it breaks my heart. And if I've always said, if I could ever find the person who is responsible for closing that library, I would really say some nasty things to them, because that is... It was such a beautiful library, and it's still there. The problem is they covered it up. They boarded up the windows with plywood. They left the books inside, and over the years, the rain and the snow has crept in through the ceilings and ruined this absolutely beautiful collection of books, books that probably I read 100% of the books in the children's section and maybe 70% of the books in the adult section in that library. And it's on, it was just one of these wonderful buildings, oak and hardwood floors and mahogany and desks. It was fantastic. And it's still there. And maybe someday some rich, I mean, there are people who are rich in, you know, from Detroit. I wish they would take it and fix it up and bring it back to life for all the children of Detroit, because there is nothing like being able to get lost in a book. And so I just want to encourage you at this time, even if you're, you know, my beautiful, beautiful goddaughter, Kenesha, she did NaNoWriMo 3 times and wrote a book, an entire 50,000-word novel in the month of November. Now, I hope we're not going to be locked up all of May, but what the heck? You can try it. You can start writing. And she found that joy on paper. And my son doesn't write. And someday he's going to write. But right now he's spending all his time. Well, he writes these scientific things that are so difficult that even his father can't understand them, and that's saying a lot. He writes all this technical stuff, and he spends his life looking at slides in the, you know, and stuff, because he's a biomedical engineer, and which we need right now. We need all the biomedical engineers and all those people out there to study all of these things. And my son is an expert in a certain section of biomedical engineering. So I want to also say hi to him. But he's getting a chance now to actually read a little bit. Usually he's just all the time behind that microscope, and so I'm glad that he's there stuck, but that he can actually read a book or two. And I sent him the Nat Geo books, many of the Nat Geo books. Again, to have a Nat Geo book on your coffee table is a dream come true, because you can get lost in that book and travel the world with Nat Geo books. I love Nat Geo books. They are the most wonderful for your mind. They really keep you occupied, and I'm just so thrilled always when the Nat Geo people send me a book. Well, it's time to say goodbye, because I'm getting stuffy in this. This is really a closet. Okay, I just want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So just start writing. You have nothing better to do right now. You've cleaned out the closets and you've cleaned out the shelves. So start writing and just find the joy in today and say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. Thank you for holding down the ship over there. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye-bye now, everybody. Take care.